Welcome to Story Mosaics. Hey, I've got to tell you something. You guys have been lighting up the Reels and the Mosaic website. And Eric, who knows all things podcasts, says we're doing great. Is that right, Eric? Eric says, yes, we are doing marvelously.
Outstanding.
That's the word he used. And so thank you, Eric, for just coaching me in that and letting me know what's been happening. But we're really excited about what's happening with Story Mosaics. And here's the bottom line. It's not about just you listening in. It is really about everyone having a story and that how that really transforms our lives, building us into community. I was telling our guest here today that when I find out that she's imperfect and then I realize I'm imperfect, all of a sudden, a bunch of this stuff just kind of melts away and we can just relate with one another. And when we tell our stories, we find out we're all imperfect. So it's kind of nice. I appreciate that. And so thank you for joining in Story Mosaics. And I have the privilege of sitting across from a very special guest today, and I'm looking forward to that. Desi, thanks for coming in and thanks for being on Story Mosaics and telling your story. So tell us, just give me a sound bite. What are you doing currently, right now? What's the job?
Well, thanks so much for having me. And currently I am with the Christian Center working on opening a shelter for women and children, which I'm super excited about getting going. It's a great need here in our county.
I am super excited about that as well and how we really, 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 really need that in our community. So thank you for doing that work. But as soon as you say that, I think, well, there's a story there. There's a background and there's a backstory to what has brought you to serving in this community in this way. So here we go. I just want you to tell me your story and I maybe take it back as far as you want to, but I'm looking for those moments where something catalytic happened that changed everything, okay?
All righty. So we'll start at the beginning to give you just kind of a understanding of where I came from. So I was born to a 17-year-old mom who was addicted to drugs already. So I was born with drugs in my system.
Were you really? Okay.
I was. I was removed from her, I think, the first time right around the age of one. Badly abused. We'll leave out some of the details just because it can be heavy. Okay. But it was just, you know, started from a dark place. With that, though, I've always had a kind of deep spiritual connection to the world around me and just a different understanding. So there's so many different like catalyst type spots, like you were saying. One of the things I'm very thankful for now that I'm adult is the variety of upbringing I had by living with so many different types of families and group homes and different things. I learned just a variety of life that some people don't know because they were raised one way.
Now, wait, because that is a completely different take on being passed around, if you will, to a lot of different situations. In fact, as soon as you said it, it was like, zoom, you know, it was a different place than I thought it would be going. So you saw it as beneficial?
Yes.
And you said that there was even out of the abuse, there's this spiritual nature that you felt deep inside of you.
Yes.
Help me understand that.
So I have been told stories as early as me being 2 years old and grabbing handfuls of tracks from different places I saw them and just telling literally everybody I came into contact with, Jesus loves you. Here, read this.
Wow.
I was told at my third birthday, my grandparents had given me $3 for my third birthday. And I was super poor. I didn't know what money was, but they said they took me out to eat that day for my dinner. And I was telling the waitress that I wanted her to have that $3 because she was a mom. And I knew what it was like to miss my mom. And I thought that her daughter would like to have some time with her. And my 3-year-old brain thought that $3 would make a huge difference. But in all, her heart was touched because she just thought it was so sweet that a little girl would do something like
that. Yeah, you know what? That $3 did make a big difference. You know, it would change a life. So you're coming out of a turmoil and you mentioned some abuse, and I know you said it's heavy, but what type of abuses were you experiencing in there? And I don't want to dig in too deep, but on your part, you share what you're comfortable with. Okay.
So I connected with my uncle on my father's side who would have had me when he got me a little after a year old. He said that him and his wife were really devastated because for starters, they didn't even know I had blonde hair until they got me out of the shower. And I was covered in burn marks and bite marks and different things. Okay. So it was hard for them and heavy for them. But I know that they were the ones, even though I didn't know them, I didn't remember them until we reconnected recently. I believe that they really helped me recover from that at that 1.5 to 2.5 year age that year. And I think that's where I learned to love Jesus.
Wow. So take me a little bit further forward then, and because it didn't stop there in terms of being passed around and experiencing a lot of different homes. Can you even remember how many different places you lived in those years?
I can't. I know that I was in a different school every year.
Every year?
Every year, sometime during the school year, I was in a new school. So I remember every year it was like, oh, I'm going to be the new kid again.
And what does that translate into your mind as a kid? Kind of go back and capture what it's like to be a kid being in a different school, and friendships are everything.
So I didn't have friends. There was always an animal. It seemed like every home that I ended up in, there was an animal. And so I just connected with that animal. And that was my friend. In school, I didn't make very well friends. But the rebellious side of me as a kid remembers everything I did wrong at the other school didn't follow me to this school. So it was kind of like getting to turn over a new leaf every time.
Okay.
So I remember that part.
You got to start over, a do-over in the next school. So take me fast forward then a little bit into your life, because as you're growing up in that system, and now you're in your teens, what happens in your teens then?
Okay, so at 12, I actually got adopted, but it didn't last long. That was me. I didn't know how to accept that. This family was very well off. They had kids of their own, and I just never felt like I fit in. I never felt like I was fully part of the family. So in all fairness, they tried to welcome me, but I rejected them, because I didn't know what it was like to be accepted.
Sure.
And they ended up putting me in a group home to keep me safe. You know, so I was there for 3 years. It was the longest I had lived anywhere up to that point in time. It was 3 years in that group home. But what happened behind closed doors there wasn't good. I like to look at the bright side of things. So I say that I learned a lot of things in that home, that I like how to cook and clean and things that have really sustained me as an adult that I'm thankful to have learned, because I didn't learn that anywhere else.
Okay.
But it was definitely a lot of trauma, a lot to deal with. After the fact, I successfully ran away and made it out of there when I was 15. And so they just gave up on me. But that made the adoptive family decide to mourn me as if I'd passed and to just never talk to me again. So they terminated their rights, and I was left at 15 with no legal parent or guardian.
Have others terminated their rights at different points then? Because obviously your mom had to terminate her rights for the adoption to take place.
Yes, my mom actually bribed the adoptive family, so they paid her off to sign away her rights when they adopted me. I didn't understand all that as, you know, a 12-year-old, but I knew when I was 15 that mom was supposed to go back to court and get rights for me, and she never showed.
You know, I hear you taking a responsibility that wasn't yours, but I understand that, because when we're in trauma, when we're experiencing this, but you took a responsibility for saying, I kind of sabotaged my relationship because I didn't know how to be loved. But that's a very real emotion there, is not knowing how to be loved. And so the only thing you know is to straight arm somebody and hold them away. So I really appreciate
that. I'll say one of the stories with that family that really stuck out to me. So like growing up, we didn't celebrate holidays, birthdays, anything like that. Because, I mean, you're all over the place. So sometimes families didn't have time to prepare for you to be there.
Yeah.
And some families just didn't celebrate. So when I lived with this family that 12th year, I remember a gigantic Christmas. And I remember just feeling overwhelmed and very just, okay, well, when I was younger, it was a more of a, kids are talking about what they got for Christmas from Santa. And I'm like, well, what did I do wrong that I didn't get anything?
Yeah.
But then I'm 12 and this family just did it so grand and so large. And I just remember being like almost fearful and like, what is this? Like, how are you supposed to handle this? And seeing those kids so excited. And I was so nervous as I opened a present. Like, I didn't know what this was supposed to feel like, or how am I supposed to act for this?
Yeah. There's no climate in which you've been raised to prepare you for how to respond to that.
Yeah.
15 years old, you're on your own. And I take it that that means streets.
Yes.
What does that look like?
Well, I slept on a lot of couches. Mom's always loved me for some reason. So it was pretty easy to get friends' moms to be like, oh, come here, and kind of bring me in short term, you know, until it just, well, she's got to go home at some point. And a lot of the moms didn't realize what my home life was like. You know, I was kind of a shy person. I didn't like to talk about bad things. So, you know, I kept all that under a rug.
Sure, sure. So then next steps in your life and your story took you where?
So I got pregnant at the end of 16, had my daughter at 17, and that's where I really, okay, something has to change. Like, I got to figure life out now. it was really hard. So I dropped out of school because it was just the judgment you get from your peers being, you know, in high school and pregnant. Up until then, I was a straight A kid. I always made straight A's through school, just kind of effortlessly. It wasn't my fault, y'all. I had a lot of people mad I couldn't make those A's, but it wasn't. I didn't mean to. So it was really, my parents both dropped out in middle school. So I really wanted to get my high school diploma. And so I was kind of mad at myself that 11th year when I was like, man, I'm not going to be able to do this. The school wanted to ship me off to an alternative school. They didn't want to keep me in their school because I was pregnant. And it was all scary. And I was like, you know what? I need to go work. So I just dropped out of school. As soon as I turned 18, I could sign off on my to take my own GED test. So I did that. Ended up getting my diploma before I would have in high school.
Okay. Okay. So you got your diploma.
And just started working.
Okay. And what kind of occupations?
I would just general labor.
Okay.
At that point, I didn't have, you know, any specialties. So any job I could get. Mostly elderly ladies hiring me to help them out with their housework and yard work.
And so how do you balance, though, having a child and now at 18 years old, having work, how do you juggle those two?
It was very difficult. There wasn't a whole lot of juggle to it. I'll tell you something I just heard the other day. So many of us try to balance life and work, like, you know, family and work, and it's never going to balance because they don't weigh the same.
Oh.
So you got to set your priority there. And thankfully, I think I kind of knew my daughter was my priority from her birth, actually from pregnancy. Like, she was my priority. So it was whatever it took to keep her safe.
Man, Desi, we got to go back and visit that statement because that is a powerful statement. When you say, I'm going to try to balance my work life, it doesn't balance. Because what?
Because they don't weigh the same.
They don't. And so you made a choice at that point, and your daughter was going to be a number one priority in your life.
Yes.
But where are you living? What are you doing? Now it's harder to couch surf, right?
Yes. So once Kaylee came around, her dad, well, he was very abusive. You know, he usually was really good at finding us a place to go and food. He didn't work, but he was really good at manipulating people. And so he always made a way. But unfortunately, I was stuck in his control. So I went back home to mom's when Kaylee, right after she turned a year old, just because I had to get away from him. And I thought my mom would be a safer bet.
But you considered a lot of different options. And I've heard at one point in our discussion that military became an option. When was that in your life story there?
So when I was 16, I was like, man, I have no family. I have nowhere to turn. What am I supposed to do with myself? And I was like, that's obviously pre-pregnancy, right? I was like, I'll just join the military. You get a whole family and like everything you need there and they take care of you. And I was like, I'll be looked out for if I do that. But when I went in to get my physicals, when I found out I was pregnant.
Okay. You use the phrase, finding a place where you're looked out for, finding a place where someone cares, finding a place that may not be home, but at least feels something like you have an image in your mind of what home must be.
Belong.
Belonging.
Yeah.
I think that's a key word, don't you?
Yes.
And I think, you know, I keep interpreting this through the lens that you are creating for moms and kids who are homeless. Did you ever go through that yourselves?
I've been homeless several times. I was homeless when I was pregnant with my first two kids each time. The hardest stint I went through was 7 years ago, being homeless with all four of my children to go through a horrible divorce. Just to keep us safe, we stayed in a tent. And I couldn't find help, and I had no family to call. And it was really overwhelming, very just riddled with, like, a shame and guilt that, like, I wasn't providing well enough for my kids, and how do I get out of this dark spot? I was very depressed, very suicidal, just very, again, defeated at that point. I looked at my four babies, and I was trying to give them the best life I could, and I just felt like I wasn't doing any good for them.
You know, I think that's one of the things that came to mind as you were speaking there is, now you're pouring all this judgment internally and having thoughts that are pretty twisted at this point. You know, would they be better off without me? And they wouldn't be. But you know what? That's the twistedness of those thoughts. And then you have a whole nother part of it that you're feeling guilty because you're not able to provide.
Yes.
How long did that tent stay live?
It was about, I think the total part was about 7 months.
Okay. we're going through a particularly cold spell right now, and you experienced all kinds of weather and all kinds of situations. So there's a time when those kids go to sleep in the tent and you're kind of alone with your thoughts. And you've talked a little bit about where those thoughts took you. But you're a really optimistic person, okay? It comes through. It just exudes from your character. But now optimism kind of dies. So where do you focus on? What's the next step? Where do you go?
So my whole life has kind of prepared me for that, though. I've always had to look for the better way. You know, with the way I was brought up to be somebody I didn't want to be. And so, again, I've always looked for better and looked for the better side of things. What can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? And at that point, yes, I was very much for the first time ever looking at the glasses half empty, because it was really hard at that point to keep that. It's half full.
Can we say it was half empty? Actually, it was much less than empty.
Yes. It was down the last couple drops there.
It really was.
But the kids gave me the hope I needed, or the motivation, I guess, I needed. I may have lost hope at that point. I wasn't holding on to a whole lot of hope then. But just with my kids, that was the motivation I needed. When DCS came out and kind of reviewed our circumstances, their concern wasn't that we're in a tent. Their concern was that I was depressed and that I could be a danger to my children for being depressed. And so they threatened to take my kids, not for us being in the tents, but because of me being depressed. And so I looked the gentleman in the eyes and told him, if he took my kids, you won't find me alive tomorrow. And he believed me and left my kids with me. He said, well, it's not ideal, but you're doing the best you can, so we'll leave it be for now.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that's also where I just had to get some extra motivation. You know, I had to say, okay, this is a fine line here. Like, my kids are my everything. I can't lose them. So I really started digging and looking and like, okay, there's got to be something I'm missing. There's somewhere there's a hand up here. I don't want handouts, you know, not that type. I'll work for what I want and need. But where's the hand up here? How do you get out of this? And I finally found an organization that was willing to give us some help.
I love the fact that you said, my kids didn't give me the hope, because that's a little misguided, okay? But they gave me the motivation. That's a key development there. They gave me the motivation to find a different way. I'm looking into your eyes, and I'm having trouble keeping my eyes from getting really moist, okay? But when you said to that DCS worker, you know, if you take my kids, there's no tomorrow for me. This is my motivation. This is my tomorrow. This is my next day, one day at a time. So what was the organization that said, hey, I'm going to give you a hand on this?
We'll backtrack to that a little bit.
Thanks.
What kept us alive in that tent was going to like the church and getting things like make s'mores and just going back and making s'mores with the kids and dancing around a fire. I'll tell you, looking back now that I'm doing what I'm doing, my older kids who are 15 and 12 have heard me share some of our story. And they asked me a couple months ago, Mom, we were homeless. And it just gave me so much peace over that part of my past that my kids didn't even know we were homeless because we made it that fun. But there was a program called Safe Families.
Sure.
And so my issue was, you know, I'm pushing a lawnmower and I'm pushing a double stroller around the neighborhoods all the time, trying to just mow and come up with whatever money. How do I start a job when I've got kids that need child care and I don't have money to pay for this child care? So Safe Families was able to host my kids for 2 weeks so I could start a job and save up to get child care started and then, you know, work our way out of it.
Sure. Very familiar with Safe Families, kind of at the inception of that organization. So that's really really cool that connection point.
6 years later, I still go to the mom support group. I'm still part of the support group for us moms. And now I'm in a blessed place to kind of get to go back and welcome new moms and make them feel more comfortable as one of the moms that used to be kind of really skittish and standoffish.
There's been a lot of healing that's taken place here and a lot of healing in your life, but also in your family unit and how you approach things. But there's always a tug that when things get difficult, we want to go back to the familiar. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Even when the familiar is really dark. Have you ever gone through some of those times where maybe you're saying, okay, it's not good, but I'm pulled to go back to the familiar?
I can't say that I am.
Oh, I'm a
keep going person.
Keep going forward.
I can say, though, that something maybe I could share that along kind of that line. I'm a little OCD, so when my house is a mess, it drives me crazy. And I caught myself earlier in 2024 being really frustrated with laundry piled up and dirty dishes and kids not wanting to help out with things, right? I think all of us parents get upset like that yes. sometimes. But I really had to check myself and say, you know what? 6 years ago, we didn't have this laundry to wash. We didn't have dishes to be in a sink piled up. And so I really tried to reform my thoughts there. And instead of being frustrated with it, think, what a blessing that we have this mess.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have it before.
Just to reframe the circumstances. And that's what you've done several times. It's had to reframe and see things through a different viewpoint. You know, my life verse is pretty simple. Paul said, I've become all things to all men so that by all means I might win a few. That's not just men, that's mankind. And I feel like in the role that you're playing now, you have become something to a lot of different people so that a few can be snatched out of a fire. When you see a person that is a woman with children that's homeless, and I have to admit, this has been one of the hardest things that I've viewed in our community, is to see this blight. I was so happy to see, you know, what Wheeler Mission in Indianapolis is doing with women and children's ministry and how important that is. But this is a blight on our community when we are not putting our thumb on women and children who are homeless, who are, and not just homeless, but there's resource starved, resource desert. So when you think about this little idea of becoming all things to all people so that you might snatch a few out of this fire, tell me what that looks like today in your life.
With where I'm at, I'm passionate about trying to connect with people and let them know, like, I've been there too. So I'm not just learning from a textbook. I find that really to be what builds rapport with those that are still unhoused and in those dark times, because they think that people just read a book and think they know better. And people are like, you don't relate to me. And so I'll be like, hey, but did you know I was actually out on the streets too? And then we open that door and we can dialogue. But I also like to go just sit in the dining hall with them and eat with them. And
I do too.
You know, just there's so many ways to connect to people. So I feel like really, if you just take yourself out of priority seat, you really can connect with so many people and become something for somebody.
Yeah, that's right. I need to explain the dining hall to a lot of people who are listening in that are across the United States. But the dining hall is the place where there's a priority first in this to feed those who are part of being housed at the shelter here. But then there has been a vision that's been cast several years ago, actually during the pandemic, that said, you know what, there's a lot of other people who need food. And so we're going to now feed the community. And I went over there just a few weeks ago. I don't know what I was doing, but I didn't have anything to do that evening. So I wound up over there serving food. And the thing that broke my heart was the moms that were coming in there that were part of our community that would not have a place to stay that night. And you're helping provide that bridge. What's that going to look like?
Well, one, kudos to the Christian Center for seeing that need and doing what it's taking to get that need filled. You know, it's not like I'm doing it. I'm just getting to help support that. But we're going to have a couple of houses set up. My goal in this is to be able to work with women and the women that have children with them. Some women will have, you know, DCS will have removed their kids. So I'm really, it's important to me to get to work with both groups so that we can help build these women back up. I want to empower them to be the women they're created to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, I knew when I came out of that, my self-esteem was gone. You know, I was so beat down. I didn't believe I deserved anything good. And so I'm really excited to show these women that they're worthy. They're worthy of a better life and that they're capable. It's not impossible. They're not too far gone. Anybody's reachable. And so I'm not going to push religion down their throats by any means at all. Yeah. But I'm hoping that just in the way I love them, that they'll see that, you know, Jesus is real and that he loves them through me.
That's right. You know, I found personally in my own life that the worst possible thing I can do is try to hinge this on religion. First of all, I don't have a religion. I have that relationship.
Yes.
And so my connection point comes not through trying to push something, but inviting them into this relationship. And that relationship starts with you. You are the only image they have of someone who cares, who's not judging them, who's not holding up this sign that says you are unworthy, but you're giving them hope and a motivation to make that change. So tell me a little bit about one person, one story of one person that you've dealt with that you go, okay, this is what I'm hanging my hat on. This is what I'm holding on to. I've seen something happen in this person's life. Can you kind of give me a story of a person that you're seeing that growth take place in?
I can't just yet. I wish I really could give you this great story, but not just yet. I can share, though, that I'm noticing a handful of people out here that are regulars, that are coming here for services constantly, that are getting so close to ready for help. And, you know, it just takes that consistency, that being there every day for them and not pushing them, but let them choose when they're ready. And the thing is, they know the door is open. They know my door is open when they're ready. And I've got one that keeps telling me, maybe tomorrow I'm almost ready, Desi. And I'm like, hey, I'm ready when you are. And so just keeping that door open, you know, not pushing too hard, because I don't know if we realize, I think we mean good when we try to push people to the right way, right?
Yeah.
But when we do that, we're pushing them away on accident.
Yeah, you know what? I really feel strongly about that, because I hear people almost get an edge on their voice when they're pushing that person and trying to tell them what they need to do. And as soon as we do, you can almost watch the doors close, and because they've been pushed a lot of different times and they've been pushed away. And they've also, when we push people, there's usually a condition attached to it. You know, you have to do this, you have to do that. And so it becomes a new kind of conditional love. Yes. And that's not at all what they're needing at that point. Yeah.
So the setup for the women and children's is going to be, this is your life. I'm just here to help you see some options that you have. And we're going to keep the ball in your court. You're going to figure out how you want to build your family.
Man,
I'm just going to help you see what there is.
Yeah, I think I just heard a vision statement. This is your life, and we're going to. As soon as you do that, you give them the choices, and you put the ball in their court. Again, we're coming back to this concept of letting them find the motivation. And in this new year, there's a lot of people that are going to need that new motivation and that new opportunity to make some differences. I personally, on a personal level, am so very, very, very excited about what you're doing. I couldn't think of any place that we could invest the finances of this ministry, because I happen to be on the board. She said earlier, she goes, and you're on the board, I have to be good, you know? No, you don't have to be good. But this is a board that I serve on. When I retired, I was asked to be on a lot of boards, and I said no to a lot of places. And there are two things that really compelled me to be a part of this. Being a part of knowing Rob, and knowing that he was a leader, and knowing the vision that was there to change lives one at a time, just by touching people. And just to see what you're doing, man, just jazzes me to no end. So, Des, thank you for joining us so much and just being a part of Story Mosaics today, because everybody has a story, and this has been wild to hear yours. And you know what? I so appreciate the heart of the motivation that is part of your life. But I also think that it's always very, very brave to tell our stories. And it doesn't come without a cost personally. So, you know what? I this is just part of my personality. I'm just going to be praying for you, because I really appreciate it so much. I want to tell the people who are part of Storm Mosaics in a distance, a couple of things have happened recently. Last week, Linda came and she told her story. And out of that, she just did that by getting on Story Mosaics, and there's a tab on storymosaics.com that says you want to tell your story. And so Linda shot me a note and said, here's my story. I want to encourage other people to do that. I want to encourage them to go on storymosaics.com and click on the tab that says tell your story, and then just tell your story. And there's different ways you can do that. But I want you to know that there's a free way. Okay. There's an opportunity just for you to type out your story or tell it audibly and let us know about what their stories are. Then secondly, I want them to know that there's an opportunity for them to be a part of this ministry in different ways, just to touch more lives through it. And so we want you to be a part of Story Mosaics and touching people's lives. I want to be a part of what you're doing as well. And that's significant to me. So thank you for joining us on Story Mosaics today, Desi. And thank you for all listening in as well.